You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Podcast Network. Find all of our shows at wearelibertarians.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
They're saying this, they're saying that the millennials are going to be the richest generation, is because all the boomers are dying and they're going to inherit all that wealth.
Are they though?
Or depends on how much the government takes out in taxes, if they can weasel their way in to get all that money to pay the Social Security for all the people who are going to be needing it. So,
yeah. See, the joke is that all that inheritance is going to go paying student loans.
Yeah.
They're just gonna break even. They're just gonna break even with the inheritance.
Well, the student loans are getting forgiven, man.
Some of them are. Some people are getting the student loans for them. Like some of them.
I don't know who you're talking about.
The worst thing about the student loans is this whole stupid care thing where, like, well, based off your income, you know, we will, like, you know, control your payments. I just go, like, that's terrible. That's 10 times worse. Some of y'all need to pay these student loans.
Here's the thing about the student loans thing. We get into it, I guess. Everybody's like, well, just pay what you took out the loan, just pay it back. You don't understand how I'm going to use the word fucked.
Oh, come on,
student loan program is.
Thanks, Reinhold. Thanks, Reinhold.
It's after 8 seconds. We're good. The whole system is so screwed up because of all the different laws and changes. It's like government screws something up. Gee, imagine that. Government screwed up the student loan program. So now all these people are just getting ripped off. Mm-hmm. You pay because you can pay into these loans and they go, oh, it's income dependent, right? So you pay on the loan for 20 years in an income dependent thing. So no matter how much you pay, it's considered paid off after 20 years. But then they jack around with what constitutes a payoff year. And then they sell your loan. So you're paying on it and your balance is, let's say you take out $20,000 and you're paying these lower payments. Well, they're racking up interest, blah, 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 blah. And then your thing gets sold to another servicer And every time what they do is they take that unrealized interest and they roll it into the principal. So now your principal is $60,000. So now you're paying interest on $60,000 with this next servicer. So now you're paying, if private lenders did any of this stuff, they would be so in jail.
Yep.
For the massive fraud that they're committing, but the government can do it. So now the government is screwing over all these people. And that's why they're going in and trying to do something to help alleviate some of that. And whether you agree with it or not, it's a government program. The government needs to either stop it or fix it or do something with it because they screwed up. They need to fix it. And you just have people who don't understand that stuff going, well, you took out a loan, you should just pay it back. I don't see what the problem is.
Man,
there is a lot of that.
Loans sound complicated.
Yeah. And there's also
a
lot of people who did take out student loans that went off and bought other things and barely even touched their student loan debt. There's a lot of people who complain about having student loans but have a $95,000 pickup truck. All right. Those are the people I want to talk about. I don't care about the person living in there's like 8 of them living in a 3-bedroom house and they're driving like a 90s Accord. Don't care. That person needs help. But the person that's in like the $95,000 pickup truck and 105 Infiniti G-Wagon piece of junk with the $2,000 iPhone, nah, that person can pay his back his freaking loan. They have a trade-off issue. Anyways, hello everybody and welcome to an exciting new episode of Low Key on the Wheel Libertarians Network. My name is Harry, aka the Moving Target. unbeknownst to you, you guys who are the big, awesome, amazing key holders, get to watch and listen to all that amazing content we talk about before the show. You know, so, but we rolled in some of this for you guys. So you get a little treat. So, two of you guys, amazing key holders. You guys love this stuff. Anyways, as you guys know, we have some amazing topics today. You guys saw the banner coming off. We're going to talk about esports today. I barely know anything about this. It ticks me off about it most of the time because every time I see it jump off and try to do anything with it, pisses me off with it. these two, the cast of characters that we got today, they enjoy it. They have issues with it. So I'm going to let them go talk about it and try to educate me on the subject that I'm ignorant on. But as you guys know, like I said, I brought some casts. So let's introduce them, bring them to the floor. You guys heard their voices. Let's know their names. Reinhold, why don't you go say hi, Reinhold?
Hi, Reinhold. No, this is me, Reinhold. I am just a guy, you know? That's all it is. Nothing major, nothing important. Just a guy.
Okay, just a guy. All right, fine. And we also got Vincent. Vincent, you go say hi.
Hey, everybody. I'm also here. I love talking about this, and because it gives me an outlet for my my doomer mentality. Esports is lets me just put all the doomer into one spot.
Yeah, and it lets me talk about all the frustrations I have in other areas that we don't get to talk about on this show.
Hi, Jackie.
Yeah, that's something we're going to probably bring on talking about, like, esports. Jackie might have some opinions. Anyway, so, So all those people that did listen to that treat, let us, like, rag on, like, student loan debt, stuff like that. So, yes, we usually don't get to that much stuff, but, if we're going to let it go on. Great little opening. This isn't my topic, so I'm not going to tee this one off. So I'm going to hand the ball to, you know what? I usually give it to Vincent for some. Just Reinhold, do you want to tee it off, or do you want me to give it to Vincent?
Well, I can tee it off by saying esports is a wonderful thing, and everybody loves it, and it's a great outlet for people who love games to be able to just enjoy watching the best players and play the game that they love. It's all good. There's nothing wrong at all whatsoever. Right, Vincent?
Totally. That's totally not the most sarcastic comment you could have made. And and we can easily just immediately start doom scrolling into what esports has become. So how about, Reinhold, what is your history with any esports stuff? Just like even just watching it or anything?
I actually have a little bit more history than a lot of people might have. So I enjoy watching. So I grew up watching football, other sports like that. So there was this concept early on when esports started to be a thing where people were like, why would I pay money or why would I spend my time watching somebody else play a game that I could play? And it's like, I can play football and I can play basketball, but I sit down and watch the best people playing that sport because it's entertaining to watch. It's the same thing, right? So that's when that mentality has to kind of coalesce around it. So it makes it something that's actually acceptable, right? So I started watching a little bit of CSGO when I was, you know, early on, because that was like the big thing leading the pack. And then I got into a game called Dirty Bomb. And that was going to be like the new esports breakout, right? And it was a very interesting, fun game. It was very fast paced. It was 5v5. But it had respawn, so it was a little bit different than CSGO. It was a lot of fast movement. And the esports leagues were trying to get that as it first came out in a public beta. They were trying to get that as an esport right away, and the developers said no, and they tried to write their own coding to do the observation stuff. And it was they fumbled the ball a lot on that one. There were some issues, and the player base went down, and they never recovered. But early on, they were trying to do esports leagues. I was actually I was one of the people who was trying to put a league together. It was me and two other guys that had actual esport experience with Wolfenstein. You know, Return to Castle Wolfenstein was a thing then as for esports, and that's where those most people came to this one, because the developers of Dirty Bomb were the developers of that, the net version game of it. And made it popular. So they were making the Dirty Bomb as their own new thing. So a lot of those people came over. So a couple of the guys who had that experience and I got together, we kind of put together a league. We had a couple of games. The players were complete assholes. And it became so annoying that we just stopped doing it. But there was another group that was trying to do it. I ended up being a caster for a couple of the games. Right. So I would be like the person as it's happening, trying to explain it and have commentary and do color. And we didn't have as good a handle on certain things. It was really hard to kind of cast what we were doing. And then the two guys were both trying to do color, and one guy wasn't doing play by play, blah, blah, blah. So it was a whole thing. But that's not an easy job. And I give props. And yeah, we can talk about the problems with esports all day long, but the guys who do the casting and make that sound exciting, which really helps amp the game up to where it's enjoyable, those guys are rock stars. And I really, you know, appreciate what the work they put into it and what it takes.
Absolutely.
And one of the biggest people who were trying to push Dirty Bomb into being a thing was Pansy, who was a CSGO commentator. She does the play-by-play on that. She really loved the game, so she kind of tried to push it. She knew developers. It just didn't work out because of the development crew and some of the people playing it. They had a whole thing fighting back and forth, and it turned into a whole mess. And it's still playable today, even though the company has abandoned it. But they still have servers that they rent out to the community. As long as their community are paying for those servers, they'll keep them up, they said. So it's still out there. You can still go play it. It is not nearly what it could have been. It really missed the mark on its potential. But that's my history with mostly esports. And then I watch other esports, like tried watching Overwatch and Paladins and all that stuff. And it's just like, if you can't do the play-by-play in color on the casting of those games, and the camera work has to be good to know what's going on, to get the people who are watching to follow it, it's not going to be as nearly as successful as something like a CSGO, where it's so well honed because they've been doing it for so long. They know how to do it. They know when to be looking at the right places. They know the replays. The tools are good. That's what makes or breaks a game, in my opinion, on top of the other issues of personnel and quality of the game and everything else.
That's fair. So for me, I was really getting into esports because in college I was really into playing League of Legends with friends, and we actually were watching it during season 2 of their world championship, like the first like official world championship that everybody recognizes as the first real championship. And I've been watching it off and on throughout the years since then. But because I have the occasional infinite rabbit hole, I was into a lot of the journalism and all the other stuff outside of it, and people talking about the game and all that kind of stuff. I've also occasionally watched some CSGO and as well as the occasional Overwatch League before it, like, you know, died. But a lot of the other games that existed. But for the most part, mine's mostly League of Legends, but a lot of my stuff through League of Legends, I was able to find a lot of useful resources of actual people who talk about these games and get into these games, have a lot of information about these games. So I end up seeing what esports has kind of become at this point compared to what it used to be or what it could have been at a point. So for me, one of the things that the reason esports is at this position is, in my opinion, it's a term that was used by these group of journalists that I follow. They have their own YouTube channel that they created. So they've got a whole network called Last Free Nation, and they have a series called The Four Horsemen, where they have three journalists that have been around esports for a really long time talk about esports, and they coined the term esports winter. That last year was like when the bubble popped, and we've entered an esports winter. So these three journalists, Thorin, who is the esports historian, who's been in esports since Quake, like that was his game, but he's in CSGO, he's been on broadcast and casting and all that stuff. There's Monte Cristo, who who casted for Brood War and League of Legends and was at the beginning of Overwatch League, but has also ran a team, coached teams. You know, he's been all over the map on what the actual behind the scenes stuff. And then Richard Lewis, somebody I talked about before, who's won multiple esports tournaments of the year, who's played, played in Source, like CS Source professionally, but has also like hosted like DreamHacks and CSGO events and all that other things. But esports has hit the what they call esports winter because a lot of the investment money has dried up. All of the people that bet really big on these esports have gotten burned. Because if you look at something like League of Legends, their LCS, the North American League, there were teams that had investment from the Golden State Warriors. Mm-hmm. The Milwaukee Bucks owned a team. The Houston Rockets owned a team. They put all this money and effort into this league that was year over year losing viewership. Mm-hmm. All the way down. And a lot of these people that have put in a bunch of money have gotten burned, especially with stuff like Overwatch League, which we can get into Overwatch League because that in and of itself was such a massive disaster that mm-hmm. probably poisoned the well for a lot of esports in general. But we've now hit this point where all of esports is Saudi money. Saudi Arabia is basically using esports to sports wash what they're doing.
It's not just esports, though.
They know there's a lot of things.
Golf leagues, a bunch of the NBA leagues.
Yes. But in esports, it is much more predominant because now Saudi Arabia owns ESIC, the biggest CSGO tournament. And the biggest CSGO league in general. Now that Overwatch League is canceled, Saudi Arabia bought the rights to run a Overwatch League. They also are going to do the esports Olympics in Saudi Arabia. No. And they have 25 teams that they've set aside that they're going to allow in to Saudi Arabia, and they're going to build places for them to live in Saudi Arabia and play their these esports games in Saudi Arabia.
Mm. Well, you understand too. It's Saudi Arabia now owns the entire golf.
Yeah.
Business. Mm-hmm. So I mean, they're not limiting themselves. I'm just saying they know where it's been. But here's the thing: is that could change. So the problem is that esports is that it's all funded by advertising. And what you can do for advertising. So you want to get the eyeballs in the seats, watching the shows, showing up at the live, you know, that sort of thing. And then there's a lot of product placement and a lot of advertising for that. That's how they make the money to pay off the teams, right? So how you structure that, you have to go by what's going on with the advertising. And the problem you have is that if you don't get to viewership, the advertising goes away. Plus advertising lately has been going downhill for years, paying rates because they're trying to more focus where their money spend is to get the best return on it. And even like on podcasting and radio and other things like that, that money's drying up because it's not giving as much return as they were hoping for on it. So that's where you get the people like Saudi Arabia where they can come in here because they just got money to spend, to burn basically. And they can do the things that they need to get out of it because there's no competition for that because the advertising isn't where it needs to be. Part of the problem is that the viewership is down because some of the esports that they're trying to do aren't games that have a long lasting life. Like you have football, you have soccer, you have baseball, etc. Basketball. Those are games that are going to be around, that have been around, and they're going to be popular games for the next, you know, however many years. But Overwatch is not a game that's going to last that long. CSGO has survived and lasted as long as it did because it breaks down the core of the gameplay so well that it's actually something that's going to last. It's like almost as ubiquitous as a baseball would be, right? It's got rules. Mm-hmm. It's very simple to follow. It's got great tools. All that stuff is there for that game. It's probably never going to go away. It's been around for so long. But you got these flash in the pan games that come along and people get hyped for them for about a year, 6 months to a year, maybe two. These leagues all start up because it's going to be the next big thing. And then people playing the games kind of go, eh, you know, look what happened to Fortnite, right? So I play Fortnite a little bit. I've been getting back into that. But it had a big blast and it was a big deal. And then kind of went, because people started kind of get bored with it because it wasn't enough to capture the attention of people for a long term because of the style of game that they were presenting. Player Unknown's Battlegrounds was where I thought that would shine because it's a really detailed game mode and everything like that. And it's very, very more set in a realistic type of gameplay as opposed to a more fantastical or arcadey type of gameplay like Fortnite was. But it didn't do anything either. And it can be attributed to many different things. It's not usually just one thing that kills it. It's a combination of people putting together these leagues that don't know what they're doing. And financial incentives and structure aren't realistic for the type of game that they're doing and what money they think they can get in. And that all kind of collapses in on itself. And at that point, you get people who are excited, get in there and try and play. Then I find out they're not getting paid any money. So why am I spending my time playing these games? So then you have the better players going off and doing other things. Mm-hmm. Now you have less quality gameplay, which nobody wants to watch less quality gameplay, right? So the only thing that's really I've seen that's successful right now in doing this is a CSGO, a Valorant, which is not as successful as it was when it first came out, but it's still chugging along because it's a kind of a similar gameplay style as CSGO. And maybe League's still around, and I know there's some TFT stuff and things like that are going, but who knows what's going to actually survive and last long as a game type. Because gamers, we get bored with old game types, right?
So Ronald, you actually have two different topics I want to talk there. So I want to jump to the first part of it. We talked about the advertisers. Well, you see, the biggest issue with esports isn't the advertisers, it's the fans. Because the issue is that for esports, the esports fans don't like to spend money. They don't like to spend money on anything. So they're not going to spend that $100 on a jersey like you would for a lot of other things. They just don't spend the money. There was a perfect microcosm of it is in League of Legends. So the Korean League of League of Legends was originally run by a separate company called OGN. Mm-hmm. And how OGN ran their League of Legends was that on Twitch, there was a paywall. So you could watch standard def as it's coming out on Twitch, or you can pay the money and have access to all the VODs and high def streaming. When Riot bought out OGN, bought them out to run League of Legends in Korea, the fans go, well, now that Riot can get rid of that stupid paying for things, why would I want to pay for it? They can just give me the games. Well, I don't want to pay for these games when I don't really care about them like that. I'm not going to spend my money to get a backlog of games when they can just give it to me for free. And a lot of the advertisers don't get a return on investment for most of these leagues. And when they spend exorbitant amounts of money to have like Kit Kat is a sponsor for League of Legends, and then they're getting no return on investment from people buying Kit Kats, they're not going to put their money in it anymore.
And I think that's more a case of the amount of viewership as opposed to the type of viewership, because I think there are people who do spend money, but there's not enough of it. Like, you make that up in volume on a football or a basketball or baseball, exactly. Right? So you have so many people watching that enough people will succumb to that advertising that'll make their money back. You don't have enough with the esports. You don't have that large base that can that can basically counter the people who watch for free. There's a lot of people who watch football, don't buy jerseys, don't do any of this stuff. They watch the Super Bowl to watch the ads because the ads are funny, but nobody actually remembers the ads or do anything. But they're going to go buy stuff based off it. But there are people who will. There are enough people who will because it's such a huge base that they end up making the money off of it, where you don't get that with the esports. It's just not enough people watching that because it's not as you, it's not as, I hate to say the word ubiquitous because I use it too much, but it's like you turn on Sunday, you watch, there's football on TV, everybody was watching it, and that's how it got built. Where do you go to watch esports? You have to go to Twitch, which means you have to be a gamer, or you have to be somebody who's into gaming to begin with, or who's willing to sit down and do that. And it's a smaller base. It's not just in your face and in your home automatically for you.
Well, yes and no, because it's on Twitch, but it's also on, a lot of it's also on YouTube as well. So it's right in front of your face if you really want it.
But it's a similar thing,
that's,
too.
That's different, yeah. Is that the, from what I understand, less than 1% of the people who watch esports buy esports products. They don't buy jerseys. They don't buy merch. They don't do any of that. They don't care that part. They just want to watch the game. They buy
KitKat, though, or that sort of thing.
Exactly. Is what I'm saying. They don't buy any of the advertiser things either. Oh.
What's the percentage for like a football? I don't think I think it's probably a similar percentage, but it's enough volume. And there was talk about putting some of these esports games, instead of having it just on Twitch, they would put them on ESPN. Now, if you put something like that, you put it on ESPN, I think they did it wrong. They did it at the wrong time with the wrong kind of way they did it. But that's part of the issue, right? So I think that if it was a game that was, because you remember football didn't start out that way either. Nobody watched football to begin with. It was just like on a Saturday afternoon or something. Nobody was paying attention to it. It's filled time. And then people started catching it and seeing it and getting more and more involved. Mm-hmm. They don't give it enough time on ESPN because they expect an immediate return. So it never gains any traction.
That's what I have with a lot of these like newer sport leagues, is they try to be where the NBA, the NFL is at now, and not to look at the years of work of nobody watching their stuff, nobody's paying attention, but they want that money. There's a lot of issues that WNBA has. It's like you guys have a lot of benefits that the early NBA did not have. You know, it's, or you need to generate your fans. And that's another thing with a lot of the esports teams, is like you have to pool your fan bases, and you're going to have decades of loss just to get people used to coming to watching something like that. And you know,
remember when I was growing up back in my day, because I have to do this right, back in my day, I mean, in the ABA and the NBA were, you know, two different leagues, and they were having trouble getting people in the seats. They were doing gimmicky stuff all kinds of ways. Like, we're going to use a red, white, and blue ball, and we're going to put in a 3-point line because that's going to make it more exciting. And they were trying to do all these things to get fans just to come to the games, let alone watch it on TV. They didn't have any kind of national media presence, and it was just through sheer will of just existing and making it go by. The people who were playing back then, the players hardly made anything, right? Mm-hmm. So now you've got players who are expecting that esports CSGO money when they play these games, and they're not getting it. And they're like, that's not how it works. You have to build up to that. And the people who strike out first in those leagues are likely going to be well remembered later on, you know, like the old Fnatic teams and stuff like that. They'll be remembered, but they're not going to make a ton of money. It's going to be the people come later that they're going to be building that for, if they wanted to really build this from a ground up and do it right. But nobody wants to do that. They want the quick hit. They want the easy bang. They think they can just ride the coattails of what's hot and make some money and get out. And that's not how it works.
Another reason that the merch thing is really hard for a lot of esports, again, I'm going to use League of Legends as an example. There are probably 3 teams in the entire world that has a franchise player that stayed on their team for their entire career. They constantly switch. Fans are not fans of teams. They're fans of players. And if you look at something like the Korean League, which is LCK now, there is Faker, who has been around since season 3, and he's been on SKT/T1 for his entire career, and people are T1 fans because Faker's on the team. All the other teams in Korea, in the LCK, did not turn a profit. The only team that did was SK because they won Worlds. SKT won, and they're also backed by an entire a massive telecommunications company in Korea. So all the other organizations just lost. They did not make a profit to the point where now they're trying to enforce a soft salary cap to which is basically, oh, if you're a rookie, we get to pay you the least amount of money as long as possible, kind of like the NFL does with the rookie contracts.
Yeah, you can compare that to what the baseball does, and you have people, you know, it's buying, and you get the soccer, which is like buying contracts, right? So you go play for a league, then you get bought out by another league, you know, that sort of thing. So the players move around a lot there too. It's really hard to buy into a team like that, right? So there are people who, because they're not located, like Manchester United is located in a place. So the people who live there, or the Colts live in a place. So the people who live there gravitate toward those teams. You don't have that with esports, because you have maybe North America against Europe, against South America, against, you know, Asia or whatever, Asia Pacific. And then you have those types of rivalries, and people, and you root for those teams maybe, but it's not nearly as fanatic as that, bringing up the name Fnatic, of course.
You bring that up, Reinhold. That's going to lead perfectly into the Overwatch League and that whole disaster. Because if you don't know, the Overwatch League, one of the things that they were doing is that they purposely made teams in states and cities. So that way people would have a local team to support, and they were going to have homesteads, and people were going to, they were betting that fans were going to come to the stadium and watch them play, and like the stadiums are always half full. And so one of the things about the Overwatch League that blows my goddamn mind.
So much money.
Oh, not only do they waste so much money. So like there is like the white papers that they were giving out to people to invest into the Overwatch League.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most bonkers things on it was that they were setting that all the players' salaries would be $52K.
Okay.
Which is less than the minimum wage in California, which they're all based out of. So the people investing, the amount that the paper said they were going to pay the players, they couldn't legally play the players that much. Legally.
Because
it's a job, and it's based out of California, meaning that they have to have California minimum wages. They also assume that all the teams are going to make millions of dollars apiece. And they were going all in on the homestead model of people leaving their houses to go to Dallas to watch a game, and then hoping that people in Shanghai are willing to leave their houses and go to a game to watch the Shanghai Dragons play the Dallas whatevers. And then and then COVID happened. And then half of their model of homesteads and have everybody show up is now gone. And it got to the point where they were paying teams to leave the Overwatch League. They were paying them money to leave.
Please leave.
Yes.
In addition to that, so that tells into the, you know, back when the ABA days, you know, they couldn't get people in the seats. It took years. They didn't want to wait that long to do it. They were expecting a big investment return.
Yes.
Second, it was hard for people to get into Overwatch if you didn't already know Overwatch. The thing great about football is that you can watch the football and the announcers can explain what's going on in a way that if you don't initially understand the game, you can kind of get a little bit of, oh, they're doing this and this, they're trying to move the ball. Okay, I get that. They're trying to move this. Okay, I get that. And then you learn more as you do it. And then you get to the point where you actually understand the game. The way Overwatch worked, the announcers when I watched a couple of the games that were being cast were not able to do that. They're not able to explain the game in a way that made it so a non-Overwatch person could enjoy watching that experience. It just looked like a bunch of people doing stupid stuff, and then there's no enjoyment there. There's no, you don't know, like, oh my god, this happened, and you're like, well, what's the big deal? What does that mean? you know.
That's one of the biggest issues with Overwatch is this readability. For as a viewer, that game is terrible to watch. That's such a terrible game to watch because there's so much stupid shit happening all at once. Like, what is happening? I don't know. Like, what is this fucking blue beam in the middle of the screen? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There are people who like playing those games because there's a lot of color and action. It's like the Fortnite where it's just a lot of stuff going on and stuff on the screen, but observing that becomes a bit of a different challenge, right? You're trying to watch that and go, I don't understand what's going on. So there are games with that problem. That's why I think I always go back to kind of like an Overwatch or a Valorant where it's such a simple thing that you can actually get people to kind of get into easily. There's a lot more nuance and stuff you have to learn and go on to become good at it, but you can still have a good understanding as a newbie watching the game.
So one of the game we play is Paladins, and I really feel that there's one thing that these types of games like Paladins Overwatch could probably need is some of the stats that you get from a lot of the EA sports games. I'm going to give EA some credit. Is that the ability to like go through the game and find out where things happened. Like, yes, you may have got 50 tackles, but it happened over there. And that's the one thing that you miss out from an Overwatch or a Paladins is like you'll get some people like, well, I did 300,000 points of damage. So what? Most of it was negated by either being heal, self-heal, and it was happened far away from the combat and from the action of pushing the cart, and no one gives a crap. The person with zero kills, 50 deaths, 30 assists did us a lot better because they moved the freaking cart and got us the W.
Right. Now explain to somebody who has only watched CSGO that, all right, so the point isn't to kill people. It's to get on this cart, this zone, and hold the zone. And all these flashing lights are happening. And then after you capture the zone, you push a cart, right? And you have to push the cart. You'd be in the That is borderline impossible to explain to somebody who hasn't played the game.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't think it's that much possible if you have the right announcers. If you have the right people who are announcing the game in a way that they understand the people watching it may not know what's going on without seeming so pedestrian that the people who do know what's going on and get kind of bored and tune it out, right?
Correct. And with the
When you see a fight going on the side, you can go point it out and say, look, they're having this great fight over here. The problem is it's not helping the team. They're not moving the cart. And then you can get people into that by doing it the right way. It's the announcing in those cases and the spectator controls, which have to be good. Mm-hmm. And CSGO has nailed, whereas a lot of people didn't. Dirty Bomb did not have good observation tools. It was a clunky thing to try to do, and it was unfortunate because I think you could have got really a lot out of that game.
Right. I mean, but it's also like when I say something like Overwatch, it's hard to explain to somebody who's never watched Overwatch before that this character is going to drop down, do a massive AOE thing, die, and this other character is going to show up and bring them back to life with no issues because that's what her ability is, right? And you have to explain all that in 30 seconds,
right?
While there are eight other characters interacting on the screen.
Correct. Right. Well, you get a little bit of that with Valorant, right? So Valorant is CSGO with characters, where characters have abilities, right? So it's kind of taken that base model and expanded on it with the stuff that's going on in the Overwatch and the Paladin and things like that, and Dirty Bomb. So you have these characters, but they do a good job in the announcing to say, okay, Skye's coming out. She's got this thing that she's going to do, or she's pulling up this a special ability she has. This is what's going to happen and why it's important here to do that. You know, they do some of that explaining in a way that you go, oh, I see what that character does. That's pretty cool.
Right, but it's still simplistic enough for if you watch the shooter game before, it's like, oh, that thing's basically a smoke grenade. Your brain can just go, oh, that's what that is. Yeah. That's what that. But then you go to Overwatch, and it's like, all right, so that character died, but now they're back. But I thought that they died, death doesn't matter. Then why do I care if they're fighting all the time? It's
the respawn thing is important too, because when I was casting Dirty Bomb, we had the respawn thing, and it's like you had to be understanding of the respawn timer. And that's something you had to tell people about in watching it because they were used to CSGO where you could say, okay, at 25 seconds, everybody's going to come back up. If you're 5 seconds from that timer, you can push harder because if you get killed, you know you're coming back sooner. If you get yourself killed right after the timer hits, you're out of the game for a period of time to where you're not helping your team. That hurts the team. So you have to be very aware of that timer. And that's something a good caster could say, you know, can point to a lot, and people will start to understand that process. Right,
but most of those people have to come from games. Most of them have to come from a game that already has death timers. So they have to come from a Dota or a League that already have a built-in mechanic of if this person dies, they're off the map for this amount of time. But those games are also much more slower paced. Mm-hmm. And even if somebody just randomly dies and there's a big fight somewhere else, it's still flashy enough for you to know what's going on without it being able to be as bogged down as some of the other things. A lot of times it's just like, this person's auto-attacking this person over and over again, and then they died, and now they get to do this attack over here. Compared into, this is a first-person shooter, and it's much more precise, and then you also have to explain the goofiness of a respawn on top of it. But that's a whole other thing. That's why a lot of those things...
The leagues didn't focus on getting that stuff out there to do that good explanation when they should have. Like, I know with Dirty Bomb it was harder because we were just a volunteer group trying to do it. We weren't an actual professional organization trying to make money and had a bunch of money behind us. Good people. We were just doing what we could do. And looking back on it, I've learned a lot that I could do a much better job casting that game in a way that people would understand it. Right off the bat, but there's no point now because it died. So, but that's the real key, is making sure that you're, and I think that people underestimate that, especially in even in football and NBA, you have to have good play-by-play guys and color guys who can explain what's going on and why what happened is important, or why it's such a big deal when it may just appear to be a simple little play.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, oh, you don't see, this is what's happened here, and this is going to be this. And just to give an example is Tony Romo, who I wasn't so much a big fan of him as a quarterback, but when he got into the color box, he started saying, okay, here's what the quarterback is thinking, and here's what he's seeing, and this is why he's going to choose to do this. And he would predict what's going to happen based off of the lineups and things that the quarterback was supposed to be going through, because he had that understanding. And it was so enlightening, because a lot of the color guys can't really do it that well. They do a good job, but that was so well done that I started to understand more about it. It's not, you know, there was more to it than I thought was going on in some of those cases.
I agree. It
was refreshing.
I agree. But the thing is that these games have to be good enough on their own where even if you're seeing it without the casters, you're interested. When you have a game like CS2 now, if somebody gets shot and they die, you know what happened. They got shot, they died, they peeked wrong, they died. Or this person heard them and they died. But if you have a cat, the people who want to be invested in learning the strategy and knowing what's going on, they'll listen to the casters and that will enhance their performance. But if somebody just wants to go watch a football game and watch dude get hit while holding ball, they can watch that.
I think the other thing is, like, there's not much manipulation. They manipulate the NFL rules, but not like how Overwatch and Hi-Rez manipulate the rules inside their games. A lot of those games, especially because you don't get much manipulation with CS, but during the season, like, you can have your entire move set for a character just completely changed. So it's kind of really hard to have commentary for a character or practice doing something when you understand that, hey, you've got to be hot and fresh on all the patch notes, because last season that thing could do that, but they put the updates on Tuesday, that thing don't work that way anymore.
They do that a lot, and the only way to balance that out is that they have to play on patches, like for League of Legends in particular. I think the Korean and Chinese league are like two patches behind where they are on the live server. because that's where they were at before the patch came out.
And it was like that for the Paladins Pro League. They were like several patches behind, which is the game changed drastically from the Pro League, in which you could like pick up and play. It was just like, these are now two different games. The delta is getting large on these things because they keep changing things in the back end, like for balancing.
When are we going to add in the new character that everybody wants to? When is that, this new character is so overpowered, we can't bring him into the league yet. We got to wait a couple iterations before we can do that. But, I was going to say something about sports now that I can't remember.
Yeah. And then like some people will like will watch the Pro League and go like, hey, this move, this character's really good. Go play the characters. Like, what do you mean it doesn't work that way? Oh no, they got rid of that. Can't do that anymore.
Oh, absolutely. No, that's broken. Why would we let that stay? No, that happens a lot. Esports is such a weird place in general because there's also a lot of fracturing in esports that with this, you know, esports World Cup that, you know, as an idea, I get it, but the way it's going to be run is sketchy as best. But there's so much, like, how many fighting games have an esports to them? How many fighting games have tournaments that they stream online every week? Like and how many fighting games are out there right now that are competing for iSpace? You know, because there's
Killer Instinct, Smash Brothers, and
a bunch. Oh, see, Rhino, you're like 5 years behind at this point. Is you have Street Fighter 6, Mortal Kombat 1. You got. You got the Blaze games, you got the Guilty Gear games, you got the
people still playing Soul Calibur.
you got the new Tekken that just dropped. You know, there's plenty of people who still play a bunch of old random games, like a one Evo. There was somebody playing the Super Nintendo Sailor Moon fighting game.
Yeah. Like I loved Bloody Roar. I found out like people are still playing that freaking game. I was like, what? It's like I get into Bloody Roar.
Well, here's another thing to bring up is that money is a part of an issue as far as paying the people. We talked about that before, but think about it. You're a Tens who's one of like the top guys in Valorant right now. And you can be on a league, which takes a whole bunch of time, a whole bunch of practice, and you put a bunch of effort and work into it, and you might see some money. Or I can spend that same time streaming to Twitch and YouTube and make bank. Right, because I'm the best at it. I got people watching me, terrorizing the the non-pro leagues and just having a ball. Right, so they love to watch that. So you're making a ton of money like that. People playing Fortnite, and they're like, we don't even care about the tournaments that they have on there because we just want to go have fun and knock stuff up because we're streaming and we want the content as opposed to like really intense gameplay. So,
right,
it's what people want to watch too.
Because the esports, honestly, esports only really focuses on like 10% of the people who play the game. Like, if we had to pick an arbitrary number, it's like 10% of the people who actually play the game watch the esport. You know, and then out of those 10%, how many of that 10% are going to buy merch or do any of those things or actually stay invested? And then you also have, to be honest, at this point, the players thrive the most with esports because they were making millions upon millions of dollars. Like a lot of them were making millions of dollars while companies were, I think C9 hasn't been in the black for like 7 years or something like that.
Just bleed money.
Yeah, exactly. Like they have, and they had teams in, you know, CS, Rainbow Six Siege, League, fighting games, like any fighting game they get their hands on, you know, and they were still bleeding money. And that's just, but the players will still get their guaranteed salaries and making money, while the companies were the ones that were eating all, the organizations were the one that was eating all the money because they had to keep getting investment firms and bringing them in to get more money to keep paying these players that. And the only way to keep their team relevant is to have the players that the people want to watch. So they have to spend more money to get the players that people want to watch on their team. And then that created another cycle of the teams get worse because you're spending millions of dollars to bring in somebody from Asia to come play on in a North American team that ended up being a mid team anyway, because that person immediately got culture shock. Because now they're in California from being in Taiwan and expected to keep any kind of working regiment together.
Yep. There's a guy named Disguise Toast that was he was streaming for a long time, doing a lot of different things, but he's trying to put together E teams now. And he has a video where he's like, I lost $1 million putting together an esports team.
Yep.
And the worst part was that they put together a Valorant team and they were doing really good, this Valorant team. And they got into a match that if they had won, they would have probably gone to the finals or whatever. And it turns out the people they were playing against were cheating. They got caught cheating near the end, you know, later on in the matches. And they were like saying, this guy's got to be cheating. So they finally got caught cheating. But they couldn't, they didn't retroactively go back and give them wins and get them in the league. So they were just bombed out, right? So for that, they lost all that money that they had spent.
Oh, just no. Kind of down the drain. If only Valorant's Colonel Anti-Cheat also had replays. Oh, who would have thought? No. Who would have thought? That's a whole other discussion, because like the CS2 community is losing their mind, saying that all CS2 games are full of cheaters and Valorant's Cardinal Anti-Cheat prevents cheaters, and that Valorant's better because they have no cheaters, and CS2 all has only cheaters because Valve is busy trying to make the game work because the game came out less than 6 months ago.
Yeah. Well, all you gotta do is go to YouTube and do a search for all the people who have been caught online cheating, you know, like streaming while cheating or cheating or being caught while on video actually doing it. Those videos are fun to watch because these people are just like, get out of here, man. What's the karma of them getting caught? But
esports has also ran into this thing where the example of how the players have so much control is stuff like TI. TI, for people who don't know, is the Invitational for Dota. Mm-hmm. And the pro players for Dota don't go into tournaments all year. They don't really care. They go to one qualifier to get them into TI, and it's usually just a bunch of 5 really good players, and that's it. They don't get an organization. They don't sign with anybody. They just make up a name and sign up, go into the Invitational. And since the Invitational is funded by the people buying microtransactions in game, they get bunches of money. So these organizations get completely screwed that have been let's say a C9 who has a Dota team and then 5 really good players decide we're going to come up as team and then win the tournament and get millions of dollars. And then C9 is just like, well, I invested these millions of dollars in these players, and I just lost out on everything. So why do I want to be involved in Dota? Because that doesn't make any sense for me to be here.
Right. Yeah, just get boat raced by some scrubs and showed up. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. This is what, and because there is no consistency across a lot of teams, those organizations are forced to dump money to get the big names to keep their teams running, like. It's crazy.
Yeah. Back on the cheating thing, I do miss like seeing like the kill cams on a lot of games, because when you go to see how you got shot, you can literally like, I know some people cheat from that because it's like, oh, okay, you're sniping from here, you came from this. I get that. But when you see, you're like, no, there is no way that you saw me from that kill cam. Yeah, to me, it always warms my heart. Like, that person clearly cheated, and I've got it here in 4K.
One thing I do like about the Fortnite that I'm playing lately is that they do have replays, so you can go back and watch all your matches and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So when I got my 14th win yesterday, I was able to go back and watch all of them. It was really cool.
That only works if people don't purposely take things out of context. Like, there's a bunch of clips that are posted of people cheating in CSGO or at CS2, and they muted it. But if you actually didn't mute it, you can hear they heard the footsteps of where they were going to be at, and it's like, oh, they're there, and killed them.
Right, yeah, but if you can hear, that's someone cheating. Yeah, Kobe, like, trying to make it look like they were cheating. Mm-hmm. It's like, you were running.
What are you saying, Reinhold?
I was gonna say, how would you feel about me trying to reach out to a couple people who I know who have run teams and see if we get them on to talk to them?
I mean, if you want to, that's fine.
Like a Hiko or Disguised Toast, one of those guys.
Yeah.
Essentially, but there's a lot of, like, That's the issue, is that it really feels like esports at this moment in time is dumping money into a void. And unless you're a player who's getting benefits from it, you're dumping money into a void. Yeah. The monetization really isn't there for a lot of games. For the Valorant is the first that has the first league that's even tried to be team friendly, where all the teams that are in the Valorant League, Riot is paying them to be in the league instead of the other way around, which is almost every other league that that exists. And they are adding in skins for every team for Valorant into Valorant. So every single Valorant team that's going to be in like their world championship gets an in-game skin that people can spend money, and the proceeds will be split 50-50 with the company and Riot, with the team and Riot, which is surprising. But it's also going to be hilarious when it turns out that, oh no, this team isn't popular and people bought 100 of them and now this organization is broke. And then Valve is
Valorant is keeping their team levels numbers down. I mean, they're only doing like on the North America side, there were seven teams, I guess, that got invited, and only, you know, then had the double play ins, the double elimination that they just did this last week, get into the final thing. I think that's a good way to do it, not have just a whole bunch of teams. You gotta kind of limit on that.
I believe they have like 40 teams each with their own skin in the game, but that's across all regions. But
yeah,
I mean,
yeah, Europe and.
But and like Valve is splitting sticker money with the organizations that get stickers in their game for CS2, and like that's where most of that monetization is coming from.
Fun thing is that a Valorant, though, I mean, Valorant players will buy those skins. I mean, Valorant players buy skins regularly. So it's like Fortnite people, they go to the store, they buy the skins with the V-Bucks, because you can earn V-Bucks with the Battle Pass in a way where you could actually buy things without spending too much actual cash. So people are buying those skins, and how Fortnite makes money on the end back end of that is a whole other thing. But I know Valorant and Fortnite, they are actually filled with players who will spend the money on it.
I mean, CSGO skins are a thing. There's a whole gambling ring of skins for CS. So that's
illegal trading sites.
The whole other. You mean Russian laundering sites? You mean
That's the other thing too. CSGO is popular. They have people who will spend the money on those skins and get them and do what they need to do to get them. So,
well, it's this. That's what I'm saying. It's like Valorant is like the first time that they're actually paying the organizations to be there. The organizations aren't having to pay in like with the Overwatch League, where they had to pay in $60,000 to get into the league. And then towards the end, they let amateur teams join without paying anything. Imagine investing that money. Imagine being Robert Kraft, who invested in an Overwatch League team. So the owner of the New England Patriots had an Overwatch team and watched as fucking five nobodies from the middle of BFE are now on the same level as the team you invested your money into. There's no wonder why the investment money has dried up.
I think the other thing is, which we've noticed is especially a lot of the other shops out there that, you know, they were also told the truth about what they're investing in. Yeah. Is it quite frankly? Yeah. Could they make their money back? Yeah. But like we said earlier, like it's going to take decades of loss. You know, your company's going to be around for 100 years. So you lost money for 30, but the next 70 years after that of building these league up and building this franchise up for 70 years, you'll make a great profit. But for 30 of these 100 years, it's going to suck ass.
Right. Which, I mean, the NBA went to from a point that was like they were scraping by, there were a lot of them losing money to
going bankrupt.
Everybody was really profitable to, oh my God, there's just God tier money in here and what the heck is going on?
Yeah, right. I mean, look at the NFL. Like the Jacksonville Jaguars joined in what, the early 2000s? And they had enough money for the son of the owner to start his own wrestling organization. It's like, yeah, no, that's fine. Yeah, fuck it. But God, it's...
Yeah, there's probably kids out there that the Jaguars have always been a part of the NFL.
Same with the Houston Texans.
Oh. We've always been a part of basketball. We've always been part of football.
Same with the Baltimore Ravens. Oh, sorry. I shouldn't bring that. Cleveland Brown. No. Yeah, was okay. No, there was a TV show. Basically, it was a great TV show kind of based off of this too, a little bit about this, called Basketball. Now, that movie is so good because it really does point to a lot of the problems with professional sports, especially in the early 2000s. And it really hammers a lot of that stuff home. And it was really a lot of fun. But it was just like, what I was going to say about it was that they were talking about all the teams moving, and they were like, New Orleans Jazz went to Utah where they don't play jazz, you know, that sort of thing. Some of the funny things that they had, the Oakland went, you know, Oakland went to LA, then back to Oakland again. And you know, it was just a funny little diagram that they did in there. It was a little bit
of Las Vegas.
Vegas. Yeah. So
yeah, the movie. Yeah.
Yeah. So esports as it stands right now is a toxic waste pool of Saudi money and people coping. I didn't even get into the cope that people at Riot were having, that there's like leaked messages from Slack channels, but from the Rainbow Rioters, who are the LGBT members of Riot, saying that it's a good thing that we're partnering with Saudi Arabia, even though they don't want us to exist. It's a good thing because the characters that we see are gay will be played there, even though they're not gay in Saudi Arabia, you see. But our representation won't be banned there. But so it's a good thing that we're going there.
Yay.
It's cope. A crashing of broken promises and cope. Broken dreams.
Oh, the cope. Yeah. The cope.
Put the cope banner up for you.
But yeah, it's the where it sits now is that I won't be surprised that in 5 years, Saudi Arabia is the only thing running esports except for like some of the fighting game tournaments in North America. Yeah. If I'm honest, that wouldn't surprise me.
I don't think Saudi's going to get into Valorant.
I think here's China the thing.
Might keep them out.
Here's the thing. Riot has already in talks with Saudi Arabia to let them run a League of Legends tournament, which they haven't done, let anybody else touch League of Legends in like 10 years. And if Riot doesn't run it, they don't let other people run it. Literally, if you want to run a tournament like a high school level, Riot has to authorize it and approve it first. So Riot is like, we can let you have that in your esports Olympics. Yeah, that's fine. Trust me, the money's there. China doesn't care. China's getting the money. They're getting the money either way.
They need the money. They're having a lot of issues.
They're getting the money.
A lot of wildfires. A lot of wildfires. A lot of got to deal with.
A lot of flooding.
A lot of flooding.
A lot of buildings.
A lot of tofu drink not buildings. Being there.
But no, it wouldn't surprise me that in 5 years we hear that the esports Olympics is on its like fifth anniversary, and it's all the popular esports and all the important companies from all over the world, and it's just going to be Saudi run everything for esports at this point in time. That wouldn't surprise me, because where it stands, that's what it's going to be. There's talks that there's not going to be partner leagues anymore for CSGO, for CS starting next year. And they haven't specified what that means, meaning that, you know, if it's either ESIC or nothing, meaning that you have to work for Saudi Arabia if you want to play CS2, you know.
Yeah, that's okay. Nothing.
So are you willing to bend your morals to make money? If so, then play esports.
Well, luckily I'm a man, so I'm fine with going to Saudi. Oh,
sorry. Oh no.
God, man. Anyways.
You say that, but you wouldn't really want to be there.
I don't want to be there either.
You don't want to be there.
I don't want to be there. I can't go anywhere, but I don't have freedom of speech. I can't. I'll say the wrong thing in the wrong place. Can't be there.
One thing that's interesting to watch is I was just looking at the numbers, trying to figure out how LIV Golf is doing compared to PGA now that, you know, Saudi Arabia is doing LIV. And I think it's going to be interesting to watch that viewership number and see how many people just say, no, we're not going to watch Saudi Arabia-backed sports. Mm-hmm. And if that trickles down into any of the esports stuff or not.
I mean, people are still watching ESIC. They have Saudi Arabian teams playing for them, that Saudi Arabian owned, state owned teams playing in the organization. So
I don't have a problem with that, though. I don't have a problem with countries or whatever having teams that they play into the league, but the league needs to be more ubiquitous. You know, here I am with the word again. It needs to be more balanced in ownership, right? It can't, like, the NBA is not owned by a single person, it's owned by the owners of the teams, right? So there's no buddy who can just like control everything. You have to have votes and buy-ins and stuff like that.
Besides China. You don't understand China. I think that will pull just a lot of American ignorance who don't understand who owns what anymore. They don't understand it. They don't look at it. You know, a lot of people do get messed up when they figure out a lot of companies still own the same dang thing, even though they try to leave a company. Like all those people who's like, I'm gonna boycott Bud Light, and found out how much stuff they have to get out of their life. It's like, ooh, good luck there.
Yeah, now you got all those people drinking Bud Light again and advertising it. So Kid Rock has got one in his hand all the time. So
yep.
Don't worry, guys. They're gonna continue their campaign to ban the guy on Steam who has the Sweet Baby game list.
Oh, do they actually ban that?
No, they're going to keep trying to do it, though.
Oh, yeah, that's on my curator list. I just want to know if Sweet Baby Inc. is in there just in case.
It's a fact.
Yeah, because facts. I love facts. I love facts. And representation in my games. I want to make sure that it's there. You know? So.
I mean, I don't know why they think that's a threat that they're putting their games together. Wouldn't they be happy to have all their games they worked on in one place so people can follow
list.
Them?
In a
that,
list.
I don't know.
I don't understand. I don't understand why they don't want that. You know.
We're memeing here, Ryan. Hold on, something you probably have no fucking idea about.
I can get the gist, but I'm not.
We'll get into it after. We'll get into it after
the Twitter breakdown. Like, oh my god! Like, there's some. It is a dust up. Like, this is some stuff has gone down.
But we'll get into it after. We'll get into it after the episode. But yeah, no. Yeah. Esports is a dumpster fire. We are continued into esports winter. Just play the games you want to play and try not to look too hard at the things you want to watch, because more than likely, if you care, it's going to be run by Saudi Arabia. So if you care, you'll stop watching. And if you don't care, you'll probably just keep watching and be happy about it.
Yeah, pretty much. Anyways, before this episode get too long, we're going to end it right here. Thank you for watching this episode about esports. You could have been listening to anything else in the world, but you decided to listen to this. And to you 300 plus people who tune in every week for this, thank you. You guys are, Dear Leader Spangle released the wrong episode last week. I had to go back and refix that. Then you guys re-downloaded it again and hurt the servers. Good job on you guys who downloaded it. You did notice that jump up on downloads. So appreciate each one of you. I don't know. I don't have a topic for next week. I will be really tired next week. I'm doing a server migration all next weekend. So hopefully it goes like awful and I'm working all the entire weekend. That's what I'm hoping for. Everything's gonna go wrong. Yeah, I don't know. Should be fine.
I do have a final word, Emma.
Okay, Randall, do your final word before I finish my spiel.
I just want to say happy birthday to my loving wife, whose birthday it is today, and how patient she is in letting me do this instead of sitting and spending time with her. So, happy birthday.
Oh, that'd be $5.
Take it out of my paycheck.
Not gonna lie, I would have canceled on your guys' asses. I'm not gonna lie. TBH, I would probably cancel on your ass.
I was thinking about it.
I would have canceled on your asses.
I was going to, and then you said it was like going to be me and Vincent talking about this. I was like, well, I can't not show up now. It's gonna be. I went ahead and talked to her, and she's like, "Oh yeah, you're right."
I would have hit.
You never spend time with me anyway, so who cares?
I would have full sent the. Past the next week. Leave me alone.
I know. Yeah, we can just do this. Yeah. Jackie goes, happy B-Day, Mrs. Reinhold. Yeah. Happy.
Her online name is Amara, so.
Yeah. Well, she clearly does watch our show. she's probably one of the 300 people that download.
She does watch our show. She was here last week.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
She was here last week.
Yeah, she was commenting last week, yeah.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
She was a little.
She was watching, but some people are watching us on Twitch on twitch.tv/WeAreLibertarians. So that's the letter R. And some, like Mrs. Reinhold, is watching us on youtube.com/WeAreLibertarians. And some of people are getting on the Facebook page. I appreciate those people listening there. Mostly people who watch there is my mom. So that's why.
Some of them are watching us on Rumble and on X. Because that's all working.
I didn't click it on X.
I wasn't clicking on X either.
No. No, I don't even click on sites that allows me to. No, I'm not gonna. No, I'm not gonna. That was a bad joke.
Stop there.
I'm not gonna say that joke. Anyways, thank you all for tuning in. You guys made it this far in the episode. You're a true key holder, and I appreciate each and every one of you. And I will see you guys all next week. Oh, by the way, this is an episode is recorded at live at 9 p.m. Eastern time on Monday nights. Come hang out with us live. I do appreciate you guys who download this, but how much can hang out with us? It's fun. We're fun. But, you know, I understand. We're on a podcast network. It gives us the podcast space. I get it. I understand it. I still listen to podcast. I don't listen to Spangle Live either. All right. So see you guys next week. Say bye, everybody.
Bye, guys.